Folks, you're getting a doubleheader rant this week. That's right. Hughes is doubly pissed. First off, fuck March 18th. I have taken one sick day since 2014, and it was in 2018. And I totally would have today, except for yesterday was St. Patrick's Day, and no one would have believed me, and they would have been like, oh, he's just hung to the tits. Secondly, fuck the internet. It is the worst place to find information. Yeah, we've got the collective knowledge of our entire civilization here, but I'm trying to take this thing, and I'm trying to get it to have a weathered, corroded look. And so I look, and some lady with some ridiculous, long-winded blog, the gist of it is, put it in salt and vinegar for a day. I do that. It comes out fucking shiny. Look at how shiny that is. It came out even more shiny than when I bought it. If you look closely, you can even see exactly, I don't know if it'll still focus, you can see the exact line right near the end of the stem where the old stuff is and where the water line was. This is fucking chicanery. It's the exact opposite of what it said it was going to do. Fuck the internet.
Was that too? You're upset because you didn't take the day off because nobody believe you and then making this thing look old didn't work.
Lies. This is the misinformation and disinformation that we need to fight on the internet, Sean.
Sure, folks. Sure. All right. Mashup 98. The Connor Bedard of the
We haven't done a Connor in the last little while.
Mikhail Sergachev, maybe. Maybe that'd help. Supposedly somewhere, Jesse Puljujärvi wore 98 too, but we're
I
not
don't
gonna
know
go
who
there.
That is.
We're not going to go there. Let's start here. Coots 2, 764 days still locked up. Although I was just, I want to pull this up. Mocha Bezergen, he's been covering the pretrial. Today, this was earlier today. Today, the week-long pretrial continues for the two members of the Coots 4 in Lethbridge, Tony Olenek and Chris Carbard are accused of conspiracy to commit murder on police, and they've been held in remand since February 2022. So it says there's a publication ban in place prevents media from sharing details of the proceedings, but what I can share is that for the first time, the accredited media row is full, and supporters have filled all five Ooh. Remaining rows in the medium-sized courtroom. So there you go. That's an update on the Coots 2 that still remain behind. Friday, April 5th. Okay, for everybody paying attention who's been along for this journey for 98 of these, we're getting close to the last night show. We've been doing these at 9 p.m. on Monday nights now. Twos for how long? It's got to be
probably 50, 60. 40, 50.
Yeah. And so what we're going to do is starting April 5th, we're going to have the first mashup
daytime show.
We're going to remove the Tuesday from it because obviously it's not going to be happening on Tuesdays.
It's going to be on Friday.
But if you're sitting here Monday night watching the live stream, you're going, this doesn't make any sense. It's not Tuesday.
It'll still be here next week.
Yes.
But that'll be the last one. No, two.
Two. We got two more Monday nights, and then we're going to start pushing to Friday. So if you're a fan of the show, what we want to know, you can start commenting now. Or you can text me. You can do whatever you want to do. We want to know what time during the day you would like to see it. Do you want to see a morning show?
No, Earl is saying evening, boys. No, we're not doing evening.
We're removing the evenings.
Literally, any other time than what you're suggesting are things that we will consider, Earl.
I appreciate the enthusiasm,
but literally any idea other than yours is what we want to go with.
So what we want to know is this morning, like 10 a.m., do you want to see the live stream then? Or are you more of an afternoon, 2 p.m. kind of thing? We realize, Jennifer.
Jennifer, most of us work during the day, boys.
Uh-huh. Yes. You can flick it on in the background, Jennifer. We know what you're doing. You're sitting in your office twiddling your thumbs. You need a couple laughs. Just turn it on low. It's all good.
Earl says, no, that was a greeting, for fuck's sake. Okay. Good evening, Earl.
Good evening, Earl.
Okay. My bad.
So April 5th, we got multiple Mondays coming, in a couple weeks' time, we're going to be moving from the Tuesday mashup to the mashup. It's going to be on Fridays. If you're following along on the podcast, that means in the Friday morning on the Sean Newman podcast, you're going to wake up to nothing, which is going to be really odd because we've been rolling Friday content, and also your Tuesday morning is going to change. So I realize this is going to be a huge change. We're going to have some fun with it. Let us know 10 a.m., 2 p.m., or a variation that is an evening.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, all right. Okay. All right. Shall we get on to it? Mashup 98, the Connor Bedard. Nobody. Go woke, go sad. Woke people more likely to be unhappy, twos. Anxious and depressed, a new study suggests. This is from Finland. The gender divide was probably most surprising to me. Latinen told SciPost of Finnish attitudes. 3 out of 5 women view woke ideas positively, but only 1 out of 7 men.
Okay, so as somebody who lived in Finland, did you find them to be incredibly woke and or incredibly happy?
I thought they were wonderful people, honestly, but that's like 2011.
You're dodging the questions.
I didn't think they were woke at all. I don't know. One of the things that sticks out to Finland about me too was they had no fast food. Like where I lived, there was no so everybody was relatively healthy.
Did everybody drink Fisk there?
I don't know. Can't remember.
The fish liqueur?
Once again, can't remember.
Okay. All right. So we got, by the way, a vote for 2 p.m., please. And midday, your time would be good for us out east. And
EVB, I'm waiting for Tuz to have something about woke people. He's reading the comments. All right. What's the next headline, Tuz?
Oh, God. You realize that I've got a lot of stuff to do now that I'm doing all of the work.
He's doing some of the work. You'd have to be drunk to believe this. You might have to be drunk to believe Tuz as well. Here you go. Here is Pablo Rodriguez. All right. On Friday at Le Memphrey and Magog, we announced that we are cutting the excise tax rate on brewed beer. That's good news for our craft breweries. These local businesses create good jobs and are a source of pride in their communities. Twos, what's wrong with this picture?
Yeah, they're cutting it from 4.7% to 2%.
So you're still getting an increase on... Yeah, win! It's a win!
This is the exact same thing we were talking about last week. And they're like, they're just trying to rebrand it and just trying to be like, hey, you know what? If everybody's smiling at a bar and we announce this, is it going to go over well? Well, yeah. If everybody's drunk in a bar, sure. But come on. Like, you're trying to put lipstick on this pig so many damn times.
Stop. Stop helping. That shouldn't be that funny, except I know what it's about. Here it is. Oh, that's cute. Well, this is an entry. So Jan Arden put out a video. I'm jumping around here. She put out a video saying Nenshi for Premier of Alberta. He's responsible. He knows what he's doing. All these lovely things from Jan Arden. And of course, it was on the same post that Kevin Pichitti put this Jan Arden.
Also, it is very worthwhile noting. So for those of you watching, it says, how about you fuck your eye socket, Jan Arden, replying to somebody saying, how about you keep your opinions to yourself and your like-minded friends? Twitter conservatives would be grateful. Hashtag free country. Hashtag bacon lover. I think this was about her lack of vegan options on a fucking flight or some stupid shit. She's not exactly awesome. Anyway, it's worth noting that this tweet that Nenshi put up is the third version of that tweet, because he put up the original tweet just the way it was, forgot to turn comments off, got ratioed, deleted the tweet, put it up again, got ratioed again, put it up for a third time with comments off. So this is such an unpopular thing that's what it is. And by the way, it's probably worth noting, I hadn't planned on this, so give me a quick sec, but I had this idea as we're talking here.
I wonder why he even puts anything on Twitter. Like, why he just doesn't go somewhere else.
Yeah. Well,
I'm going to turn off all interaction with the message from Jan Arden.
Yeah. And it's funny, because the whole point of it is that Jan Arden is saying, then she's going to build a party for everybody. It's for everybody. Let's turn off comments on this party for everybody. So Polling Canada released this. Somebody did a study, Palace Data Polling, and they looked at the prospective candidates and how the ridings would go depending on which NDP candidate won. And so Nenshi is by far the best for the NDP in this, in that they would only lose 7 seats if Nenshi won. 7 seats would flip to UCP if Nenshi won.
I'm getting what you're saying now. I'm like, why does it say UCP
Kathleen
there?
Ganley would lose the NDP 31 seats. Stonehouse, 33 seats. Pancholi and Hoffman, 39 seats each. Gil McGowan, the Alberta Federation of Labor leader,
51
would
seats.
Would cost them 51 seats.
Hoofta twos. Hoofta.
And that's pretty much all their seats, actually. So, yeah. I mean, I've never thought I'd say this, but I hope Gil McGowan wins. They didn't even analyze mine, but whatever.
They literally have no choice, is what you're saying.
Oh, and no. Bring this back on. If you look over on the right-hand side, it says that 222 Minutes is hosting the Tuesday mashup number 98, and 221 people are watching. For the love of God, can we get one more person?
Just to irritate them. That's fantastic. All right. What do you got for me? Give a rest. Peter Andrew Warren was first arrested on February 21st in Stevenston Community Park and charged with 2 counts of telecommunication with a person under 16 through the Snapchat app. In just over 2 weeks, Warren allegedly breached his bail condition 3 times, which included going to public parks where youth are present, possessing or consuming alcohol, and failing to report to his bail supervisor.
Yeah, and then he gets arrested finally for luring a child. So, right. Yeah.
More on pedophiles.
Yeah. And, this person's a menace to society. Let's let him out on bail. Let's let him out 3 fucking times. Come on, people.
Putin, a vote for me, comrade. Vladimir Putin has won the presidential election in Russia with a whopping 87.8% of the vote, according to an exit poll by the Russian Public Opinion Research Center.
Well, we know that when people question elections, they get labeled as far-right extremists, and I haven't seen any legitimate criticisms of this. So as far as I can tell, it is every bit as legitimate as the last U.S. presidential election.
I didn't even know there was an election. I'm like, where have I been living?
I mean, really, was there?
I don't know. Probably not. Nope. Oh, well, I mean, everybody else was killed off. So, I mean, you know.
I mean, seriously, like, he's basically the Hillary Clinton of the East Bloc.
You'll rent nothing and you'll be happy. Stephen Scheer, who ran for... sorry, folks. If you didn't tune in last week and you're just tuning in tonight and you're wondering why I keep laughing, I haven't read any of these. And on top of it off, before we
what
started...
What do you mean you haven't read any of these?
Two's hadn't uploaded the headlines.
Oh,
the headlines,
okay, yeah.
Posting. So it's like taking my brain a second to grab what he said to what I'm about to read. Stephen Scheer, who ran Hertz for just over 2 decades after 3 decades at Goldman Sachs Group Inc., has decided to step down.
After 3 decades.
The rental car company said late Friday in a statement, Scheer, 59, joined Hertz several months after it emerged from bankruptcy and started making splashy wagers on electric vehicles. Under new owners, Knighthead Capital Management and Certaraz Management, the rental company announced plans to order 100,000 vehicles from Tesla, sending the automaker's market capitalization soaring past $1 trillion mark at the time. Hertz announced its EV sell-down plans in January, citing lackluster demand, costly depreciation, and expensive repairs. The Florida-based company took $245 million charge and reported its biggest quarterly loss since the pandemic.
So the thing about rental cars is that a big part of the way that they balance the books is by being able to sell those vehicles, even though they depreciate a fair bit from when they got them. A big part of their business is selling the used vehicles. Now, does anybody, even the most ardent supporters of EVs, even want to look at a used EV? No. Do you know why? Because in 7 years, the batteries are no fucking good, and you got to throw it out. And it doesn't fucking fit in the blue bin, Sean.
I wonder what a used Tesla is worth after it's
about
been with...
$350,000. And I said, damn it, you Loch Ness monster. I ain't giving you no $350,000. You get out of my electric vehicle car.
This week in the Oilers suck. You must have had a lot of fun writing that. Although I feel like my heart breaks for this. She had to have taken this back, right?
What's she going to get?
More fries. Sarah Jones puts up a picture. So the people watching can see this. It says, I know that being at Rogers Arena, I'm in the land of overpriced food, but this is the saddest bunch of fries for $7.99 plus tax. And how many are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Like, is there 13 fries
but,
there?
But there's about six half fries.
Yeah, that make up. It doesn't. This is sad. Like you got screwed over.
You're basically paying like a buck a stick for these French fries.
Correct. And yeah. Oilers got to be better.
Not only on top of that, but you got to sit there and watch a bunch of fucking idiots in blue jerseys fall all over themselves getting fucking scored on.
Says a Flames fan. You're just angry. You're going to be angry for like the next 10 years. It's fine. It's fine, right? It's fine. It's fine. Fine.
Oh, wait. Buzz me.
Women drivers impending epiphany. From the CBC, women represent 50% of the drivers on the road and are said to decide the majority of vehicle purchases. Yet when they get behind the wheel, there's nowhere to put their purse twos. The male-dominated designers haven't made it a priority, quoted Sam Furiani. But the rise of electric vehicles could usher in a better era for purses. Another reason to buy an electric vehicle. Laptop bags and all the other belongings we cart around with us in our cars. That's because with smaller motors and no transmission tunnel, there's more room for designers to potentially devote to storage, particularly if consumers demand that they do.
A transmission tunnel? The transmission tunnel? Let me just, Brandy Weichel wrote this. The transmission tunnel. When was the last time you had the transmission tunnel checked on your car, Sean?
Just last week, I had the old transmission tunnel checked, twos.
Yeah. Okay, so, ladies, I do not want to blow your minds, so please make sure you're sitting down for this, and you shouldn't be driving, okay? But also, you shouldn't be driving while you're listening to this. I'm going to blow your mind. There's a glove box and there's a trunk. Just because you don't know which buttons open them doesn't mean that they're not there. And they've been there for a long time. This is not a newfangled gadget. This isn't something you can't find on the new Tesla Roadster.
I want to be
this
clear.
This is a well-established
piece
of automotive machinery.
Don't you think this article was written by somebody out east? Right?
Probably.
Okay. And you're talking to the women who listen to
based
us. Where do they live?
Brandy Weichel is based in Toronto.
And where do most of our listeners live to?
They live out west.
And how many of our women listeners do you think know a few things about cars?
All of them, I imagine.
Right.
Probably
so we're
really
yelling.
We're
actually pissing off our listenership by saying they don't know anything about cars. But I'm like, but this is written by somebody out east.
Sean.
Just saying.
I piss off all of our listeners. It's just that it was their turn this time. And Stevie B, by the way, classic, the three O's of bad driving. and then he actually spelled them out, which is awesome. Old ovaries and Oriental. And Nadine Ness. Whom we love, who lives basically just down the road from where I grew up. Actually, it was making me laugh. So in your face, Sean.
All right. I stand corrected.
She's the nicest lady who's ever listened to this show, and she found it to be funny.
All right. Give it. All right. Fine. Sean loses again.
All right. Now I got to go back to the banners.
It's tough for him, folks. Just we'll get him working on this banner thing. You know, it's a new concept for Tuesdays.
It's
going to
be a banner year.
Gratitude can't be airdropped. U.S. aid to Gaza. Palestinian activist Ahmed Kuda exposed the contents of a U.S. airdrops to the starving population of Gaza, and he's not at all happy, basically saying it's worse than what's going on there.
It's like, you know, the genocide's bad enough, but also I've got to eat food that I don't like. What an ungrateful fucking prick. And he's from Canada, too. He was talking about how the peanut butter was the only thing that was good in there because it's like the peanut butter back in Canada. So this Canadian dude who's over there just talking shit about the airdrop of food. Imagine that. Like, you're in the middle of this war zone and everybody's genociding you. It just genocides all over the place. It's just it's like when you go to a bar and you get a beer with a side of gin. It's just genocide, genocide, genocide all over. And then somebody just gives you food, but it's not the food you want. And so you're mad. What an ungrateful fucking prick. Fuck that guy.
The American Society of Magical Negroes. You know, if you had written this article, if you'd written that headline and I didn't know the article, but what are these morons about to do? Here we go. Two art house plays are opening across more than 1,000 screens to less than stellar results. A24's critically acclaimed lesbian crime thriller, Love Lies Bleeding, no, I did not write that headline, has the edge in 1,362 venues, with industry rivals projecting a $2.5 million weekend gross for the Kristen Stewart star. Focus features the American Society of Magical Negroes earned much worse reviews and is faring poorly, seeing a little over 1 million from 1,147 locations. I watched the preview of this and Tooze has it pulled up. I'm going to quote, "What is the most dangerous animal on the planet?" One character says. The next one says, "A shark." And then he talks over him and says, "White people who feel when they feel uncomfortable." That is the gist.
Well,
of this movie.
I mean, on the bright side now, literally everyone feels uncomfortable. It is. You should check out the trailer. 6.9 million views. And I've got this up. I've got the extension. You can get the Chrome extension so that you can still see how many people have disliked YouTube videos. So it's fun to go back to that Ghostbusters trailer from back in the day. But this has got to be pretty fucking close. 9,500 likes, 129,000 dislikes. This is the worst fucking thing ever. Seriously, can you guys just give us a good movie? You guys could have even had fun with this. You could have taken this exact same concept and just gotten silly with it, and it could have been really funny. But it was like, if it's anything at all like the trailer, it's just preachy, unentertaining bullshit. And how many more times is this going to happen before, you know, they just lose too much money doing this stuff? Anyway,
a few more times. A few more times. You know, you remember when we read about it was the Oscars, right, Tooze? The Oscars and how their specifications for how they were going to award, the movie of the year and different thing,
yeah.
Best motion picture and how they were changing it so that it had to be more diverse and all these different things. We're just starting to see it play out. Am I wrong in that? We're just finally starting to see this.
I don't think that was trying to go for Oscars. I think it was just trying to be preachy and woke. And, you know, here's the thing. It's so interesting because you've got Hollywood making all these movies that presumably they want to see. Like, I feel like they would want to see this movie because otherwise, why the fuck would you make it? Like, they have to think that there's a market for it. And so all these movies that flop, like that gay rom-com that we talked about like 80 episodes ago, everything in the MCU. If they're so sure, if everyone in Hollywood is so sure that these are good movies, why the hell isn't every theater in Los Angeles just packed to the nuts? And then, yeah, sure, every other theater in the world is empty. But why aren't there that many people watching it in Los Angeles? It just it baffles me.
I'm a loss for words, other than I just think we're starting to play it out. We're starting to see it play out, I mean. Tooze has been saying this for years. Frank James, a man arrested for Tuesday's New York City subway shooting, is a black nationalist and outspoken racist. who rallied against white Jews and Hispanics. Geez, this is quite the headline to start it off the way I'm reading it. A careful reader of the New York Times could be forgiven for overlooking that. In nearly 2,000-word article on the attack, James' race is not mentioned. The same is true for the coverage offered by Reuters. The Washington Post only mentions James' race in relation to his condemnation of training programs for low-income black youth. The Free Beacon collected data on nearly 1,100 articles about homicides from six major papers, all written between 2019 to 2021. Those papers included the Chicago Tribune, Los Angeles Times, New York Times, Philadelphia Inquirer, San Francisco Chronicle, and Minneapolis Star Tribune. White offenders' race was mentioned in roughly one out of every four articles, compared with one in 17 about black offenders and one in 33 about Hispanic offenders.
Yeah. So whenever, you know, it's, they talked about murders specifically, but it would be interesting if they looked at mass shootings as well, because like I've been saying how many times on this show, if ever they don't say what race somebody is, it's because they're not white. Because if they're white, it's the first thing. This white supremacist, this far right white something or other, white. And if they're not, then it just gets left out in Canada. And in the States, apparently, it's the same damn thing. And these people don't realize that there's a whole lot of different white people.
Recalled politicians against recall legislation. The Alberta government says it's reviewing the province's recall legislation after complaints from municipal leaders that it is being used in a way that was not intended. Alberta Municipality's president and mayor of Wetaskiwin, Tyler Gandam, said more oversight is needed to recall petitions. Quoted, "It's been weaponized by members of the community who don't agree with maybe a decision made by a member of council or even council as a whole," he said. "It's a distraction and a waste of time," he said of a recall campaign, adding he believes there should be no do-overs for elections and the councillors and mayors are already held responsible. Every 4 years, you're held accountable, he said.
Every 4 years, you've got a review of the job you've done. That's not accountability. And it also goes on to say that he's facing recall legislation as well.
Which he is, yes.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Like, it would be, I don't know, like if you had Robert Picton on your show and you said, and he said, "I feel like I was personally targeted by the anti-murder laws in this country." The whole fucking point of it is that if you don't like the job that that elected official is doing, you can get him out in slightly less than half a decade.
I don't know what it is about Robert Picton. It is coming up everywhere lately. And once again, there it is for the audience to just grapple with old Robert Picton. What was piggy parties? What the heck was it? We were just talking about it the other day. Regardless, they had giant parties there. I'm sidetracked, but you're not wrong. You're not wrong. The whole part of recall legislation is so that you can hold your politicians accountable. And what's everybody's problem with it right now is that it's almost impossible, even if they're complete and utter morons, Gondak, and you yep, need so many people that's more than got them voted in the first bloody place.
And in smaller, you know, RMs and whatnot, it's okay. Well, yeah, you need 30 people to sign the petition. Oh, well, that makes it way too easy. Yeah, but here's the thing is it's not as though you just ask 30 people and they're going to sign it. You need to find 30 people who think that they suck at their job enough that they want them out of it. So it's not just you ask 30 people and 30 people sign. It's you need to find 30 people who want that fucker out of the chair fucking tomorrow.
The other part of this in the article, it said Smith defended her government's plan, but hinted the addition may not be applied to all municipalities. Government parties said it may not apply to everyone. It may just be a pilot project. It may just be targeted to the larger cities. This is at this Premier Danielle Smith spoke about her government's plans to allow political parties to be listed alongside candidate names on municipal election ballots. What is your thoughts on that, Tews? Honestly, you're a guy who stared at politics for a lot longer than me. Why the heck would we want that?
Because you don't have people like Nenshi who ran as a fiscal conservative. And then when he got in, he was like, guess what? I fucking lied. I'm going to give the taxi cartels everything they wanted because they supported my campaign. I'm going to waste a shit ton of money on the ring road. I am going to have ludicrous budgets for any city project.
But then aren't you going to let's just say we I agree with you on then people have to.
It's a double-edged sword too, right?
Yeah, well, I just think, like, can you imagine everybody's UCP? So now everybody just falls in line with the, like, are we going to have zero independence from, like, just a one-tier government party? And, oh, great, it's UCP. But now, like, why would we do that? Why can't we just drill down on Nenshi and be Gondek, like, this guy's a moron and we don't want
Gondek him? Gondek didn't say a fucking word about it until the ballots, like, the machines were still spinning down.
Yeah, but isn't that more on Calgary voters that they need to pay attention and start holding their politicians who are running for accountability? Or was she an absolute, like, magician and nobody knew who she was? Nobody could figure out that she wasn't going to be who she said she was.
People who are watching it knew, but the problem is that it's your democratic duty to vote. It's not your democratic duty to vote intelligently. It's not your democratic
maybe duty it should be
to make an informed vote. And it absolutely fucking should be.
I mean, Calgary's getting what they
voted for.
Right.
And they're not going to learn their lesson.
Let's put NDP so we know not to vote for. That's the easy way out of this that causes more problems down the road.
But you have to realize, Sean, that most people don't stay up late Monday nights ranting to the internet about politics to the point where they're following this shit.
Well, wakey, wakey, folks. It's time we got a little more involved and realized that you were duped by a moron.
But
and
I mean,
putting NDP in front of it shouldn't solve our problem. It just shouldn't.
It kind of will, but it band-aids the problem. It doesn't. It fixes a symptom, not the cause. Right. I mean, look at Eastern Canada. They're like, well, what do you mean everything's unaffordable now? What do you mean I can't afford to pay for my heat pump in my house after everything got so expensive because of the carbon tax? Right. Justin Trudeau literally said, I will break you fuckers financially with carbon tax upon carbon tax. And they said, oh, Lord Tundra, geez, boy, that's best call. I'm going to go over that Justin Trudeau guy for sure. And then they voted for him. And then he makes it expensive for them. And they're like, well, what happened? Where did we go wrong? You fucking voted for it. And then Polyab's like, oh, we need to cancel the carbon tax. No, you need to give them all of the fucking carbon tax. You need to give them every fucking carbon tax they voted for, because that's the only way that they're going to fucking learn their lesson.
You're yelling, dude. You're yelling. Welcome to Monday nights, folks. I'm going to miss these Monday nights when we switch over to Fridays. Fridays are going to be great. If this is Tues where he's worked a full day and he's under the weather and everything else, I can just imagine what he's going to be like on a full night of sleep. Long COVID gets team colors. Like, are you kidding me? Here's the CN Tower. Tonight, the CN Tower will also be lit teal, gray, and black for International Long COVID Awareness Day. Yeah, how is that a thing? Black,
by the way?
Sure.
They didn't even think this through. Like, they're literally just not going to light some of it, and that's going to be the same as colored black. Fuck, you can't take these people seriously on anything, right?
This is the same time New York Post, okay? Here's the New York Post. The term long COVID should be tossed aside like a stack of expired N95 masks. That's according to health experts in one country who found the symptoms of those reportedly suffering a year on weren't any different than your typical virus, such as the flu. You don't say. Huh. Government-backed medical researchers in Australia say it's time to stop using the fear-inducing phrase. Quoted, we believe it's time to stop using terms like long COVID. There you go.
You know what? I think we should just start calling, speaking of getting rid of
here in Canada, we're lighting up the CN Tower. There you go.
CN Tower for long COVID. But if we're going to get rid of inaccurate phrases for things, rather than calling them immunizations, we should start calling them the McDavids, because it's just ineffective shot after ineffective shot.
Let's have an unserious talk about Islamophobia. All right. MP for Oakville. I'm going to pull it up to the tweet. Anita Anand said, Islamophobia has no place in Canada, yet it is sadly a lived experience for many Canadians. Today and every day, we reaffirm our commitment to working with Amira El-Jawabi, Muslim communities around the country to build communities that are safe for everyone.
Yeah, so that Amira Al-Jawahi, that's the lady we talked about who got that job, and then all the tweets came out that, oh, surprise, she's racist as fuck and hates Jewish people. So they don't really have a phobia for Jews. I think they got to come up with one. But in the meantime, whatever it is, she's got it. But also, you know, you keep hearing about this stuff all the time. And let's have, like, honestly, all right. So Tarek Al-Naga, he's been on the Mashup. He's been on my show. He's been on your show. Right?
Could be.
I had literally known the guy for years. I invited him and a couple other people over to play some poker. And I was taking care of the dainties, the hors d'oeuvres. But I didn't really know. And so I asked him. I was like, Tarek, I feel silly asking this at this point in our friendship. But do you have any religious dietary considerations? Because I had no idea. It didn't matter. It never came up. Neither of us really gave a shit about the finer points of it. It's just we enjoyed hanging out with each other and we spent time together and got to know each other and that was it. Did it matter what religion anybody is or is not? No. No, and then when it finally came time to be like, okay, well, I'm going to feed this fucker. I should find out if I'm going to step on any toes, right? That's what I finally asked, and it was years down the road. And I feel like most people around here are more or less the same with a lot of that stuff.
You're way too reasonable, Tuz. Can't be reasonable. New Twitter show, A Real Lemon. The ex-CNN anchor sent over an astronomical wish list to Elon Musk during contract talks to host a show on the billionaire's social media platform X, including a free Tesla Cybertruck, a $5 million upfront payment on top of an $8 million salary, an equity stake in the multi-billion dollar company, and the right to approve any changes in X policy as it relates to news content. Lemon was expected to air an interview with Musk on for next week debut on episode on X, which it is there, and had also demanded a private jet flight to Las Vegas, a suite for him and his fiance, and the company pay for their day drinking and massages.
Yeah, I mean, at least he didn't. Have ask you watched for it? Crazy.
Have you watched?
Yeah, it? I watched it. It was fucking painful. Did you watch it at all?
I've watched a bunch of clips of it, and I was trying to get through it all. I got through like the first 15, 20 minutes. I found it fascinating, too. Fascinating every time like CNN collides with somebody where they're trying to like put their own like, and then Elon Musk is sitting there going back and forth. I'm like, this is wild. It's wild.
It was a lot like that Kathy Newman interview with Jordan Peterson.
With Jordan Peterson, where you can just see what they want. Oh yeah. And it's just so clear.
We're going to get them. Okay, so what you don't think black people and women are competent pilots? Is that what you're trying to say? He's like, "No, I just don't think we should lower any of the standards for any reason." Oh, what? So you know that there aren't a lot of black doctors, right? Like, motherfucker, I'm putting it really simply, and you're just either intentionally not understanding or too dumb to pick it up. In either case, I don't think this business partnership is going to work. And no, you can't get a free fucking Cybertruck.
What's great about it is they literally stop talks. All right. No, whatever Elon wanted out of them for bringing it over to Twitter. And then after contracts just dissolve, Lemon still brings the show over to Twitter to air it there. I'm like,
yeah. Well, of course, because he's trying to make more money doing it. Right?
I understand, but he just broke off talks and thinks Musk is an idiot, but he's still going to release it on his platform and draw people to X.
Nadine Ness, Tarek and my husband have a bromance going on. I could totally see that. Yeah. Okay, back to banners.
4-H loses funding. 4-H Canada says it had to make the difficult decision to lay off 7 staff members following a major cut to the funding it receives from Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. The move comes after 4-H Canada was informed midway through the fiscal 2023-24 year that its funding under the Federal Agri-Competitiveness Program was approved, but at a significantly lower level than requested and past funding.
Man, you know what? First off, this sucks. Like, I mean, you're going to cut 4-H and I don't know what's it going to be after that, 3-H. But seriously, like, it's a great program. You weren't in it when you were a kid, were you?
Yeah, that's a long story. All my siblings were except for me.
Okay. Well, I was in Light Horse and Small Motors, and I thought it was wonderful. It was great. And I'm sure there's some kind of a 4-H program somewhere around me. I haven't seen or heard anything from them. So they're probably not doing a great job of getting the message out as of late. But also, where's places like Cargill on this? Louis-Dreyfus, like all these, Monsanto. You know, we should bug Vance and be like, how much does Monsanto help out with FFA and 4-H?
My niece and nephew do 4-H. It's wonderful. Well, and a whole bunch of
it
other
is.
Kids do
it.
It's
absolutely
wonderful.
Is.
It's wonderful. And of all the things to get funding cut, you're like, 4-H? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
What? Sorry, guys. We spent all the money on a Rive can. Fuck off. But seriously, it shouldn't have to come from the government. It should be community-led, but also at the same time, these businesses that work in these communities, like co-op should be a huge sponsor of it. Maybe they are. I don't know. But it should be a pretty damn easy sell.
Easy. Easy sell. Yes.
All right. I'm scrolling over the comments real quick. Who cut the funding? It was the government of Canada. Right? 4-H is one of the best programs ever. Great life skills. 4-H is the most wholesome program, but you're right, twos. They should solicit corporate support. Everyone is paying into 4-H to be self-funded. What the fuck they need funds for? I'm guessing that the what you pay doesn't cover all of the costs.
QP is getting super cereal.
Now, there's an organization that doesn't really have a presence in rural Canada, so they probably don't need to support it.
Today, members of Saskatchewan's largest union, QP Saskatchewan, elected Kent Peterson as their new president. Quoted, every worker in Saskatchewan has been shortchanged by Scott Moe. In this year's elections, bigger paychecks are on the ballot. Respect is on the ballot. Fixing the healthcare crisis is on the ballot, added Peterson. The gig is up for Scott Moe and bad bosses. We are mobilizing for change and we will win.
QP was founded in 1963. They've been doing contract negotiations at most every 4 years since then. In 61 years, that makes 15 different contract negotiations. Maybe 16, depending on which. The point is that these motherfuckers, at this point, the contracts, assuming that they did a good job of setting them up and not making them unsustainably expensive, he said very pointedly, this should just be maintenance at this point. You should just be checking the odd box here and there and maybe helping out the odd person who had an error on their paycheck. And that's about it. That's just about it. It should be more or less just coasting at this point. The fact that they need multi-million dollar campaigns, how much do they fucking suck? Imagine this. You're paying union dues to an organization that has been advocating for your interests for the last 61 years and your entire fucking industry is in disarray? Why the fuck are you still paying those asshats?
Toronto police playing 2D chess. In remarks to citizens at the meeting, a Toronto police... At a city council meeting, a Toronto police constable said this, quoted, to prevent the possibility of being attacked in your home, leave your fobs by your front door because they're breaking into your homes to steal your car. They don't want anything else. The advice now being given by Toronto police isn't what to do when someone jabs a gun into your ribs in a seedy back alley, but how to avoid being harmed by bad guys in your own home. And the police advice is make it easy on them that they have no reason to hurt you. They even started handing out door stops in different neighborhoods, too.
Okay, so the cops have basically said, we can't really stop this. We're not going to stop it. They're going to continue breaking into your home, your castle, your safe space. And and it's just going to keep happening. So you need to learn to live with it. And the best we can offer you is a little bit of advice so that maybe things go well for you when someone breaks into your fucking house.
People
this is to serve and protect.
People have been putting their fobs in Faraday, right? The cases that were they can't steal the signal and everything, and they said don't do that. Put them by your front door, so if they boot it in, they can just grab the keys and go. Now, I think the guy we need is this guy.
I didn't tell you, but I was like, you need to play this video.
And I want to say, as to the person, we don't know which homeowner shot at him. I guess they think that they did something wrong, which they did not. If somebody's breaking in your house, you're more than welcome to shoot them in Santa Rosa County. We prefer that you do, actually. So whoever that was, you're not in trouble. Come see us. We have a gun safety class we put on every other Saturday. And if you take that, you'll shoot a lot better, and hopefully you'll save the taxpayers money. And
it's so refreshing to see elected officials talking about saving taxpayers money.
And the fact he's just like, we're going to improve your aim and you're not going to miss next time, but please come see us. You're not in trouble.
What kind of government program do you have for crime reduction? We're going to give you shooting glasses. All right, Earl Whaley. Ford actually said you might as well leave the milk and cookies too. Basically, it's like Christmas for them.
Carbon tax proof less than 1 ppm. Keep one thing in mind when watching seven of the country's 10 premiers battle with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau over the 23% increase in carbon tax coming on April 1st. The Trudeau government has no idea whether the carbon tax is reducing emissions. Back in November, Derek Hermanitz, the Director of General of Economic Analysis for the Environment and Climate Change Canada, testified at the Commons Environment Committee. Man, like, what is up with all these committee names? Anyways, I can't even spit all this jargon out. We could say with some rough analysis that up to one-third potentially of the emissions reductions that we're projecting to 2030 would come from carbon pricing. Potentially projected, no hard facts. Environment Minister Stephen Gabeau departed conceding the government does not measure the annual amount of emissions that they are directly reduced by federal carbon pricing. It's a bunch of word mumbo jumbo twos, and I can't even spit it out.
Basically, all they're saying is that we haven't looked into it. We don't know. Imagine spending how many billions of dollars the collective economy of Canada puts towards this fucking carbon tax. Right? These billions of dollars go towards it. And the first logical question would be, how could we tell if it's being successful or not? Because then you can tweak it. You can modify it. You could step it up. You could scale it back. Fuck, maybe it's going to be ineffective because punitive taxes on goods and services with inelastic demand cause negligible reductions in consumption. But you would want a way to measure it so that you could judge it going forward. And they don't even do that. Now, if it was successful, I'm sure they would measure the fuck out of it. So what does that tell you?
Trudeau shows up hung to the tits. Sophie Trudeau is appearing on the cover of Elle Canada's...
No, you skipped ahead.
I skipped ahead, did I? What? What are you talking about? No.
I might have split this into two things, but whatever.
Well, twos is going to tell us what the heck we're talking about today, folks.
So, Justin Trudeau, I don't have sound, but Sean does. He said, Justin Trudeau said, druds, floods, and droughts. He was talking about the prevalence of druds in our current society. And look at this guy's eyes. They're redder than the fucking liberal flag he waves. This is insane. This guy looks like a piece of shit. I have been there. I have totally been that guy on occasion where you just, you know what? You're hanging out in Dave's garage till 6:30 in the morning. You go in to get more beer and you're like, oh shit, we got to go to work. And then you go, you get the Derek Hen to wake up and come over and come grab you because he'll be the only guy who's okay to drive. And then hypothetically speaking, right? Okay. We've all been there. And this guy does it at a press conference.
declared a start to its forest fire season in February this year. We had one of the worst years for wildfires ever, on top of some of the worst years for droughts, floods, and droughts in different parts of the country.
Now, I will say, okay, two things. First off, yeah, honestly, I would say that last year was a really bad year for droughts. I mean, we didn't hear a single fucking thing about them the whole time. Right? Secondly, apparently, it's standard operating procedure in Alberta to start the wildfire warnings in like the start of March. And so they basically started them like a week or two early by having them in February. It's just the optics of it seemed a little bit off because nobody's ever really expected it to.
Not to mention the worst season for forest fires after everybody got charged for starting them.
Arson.
We talked about this an awful lot. Sophie Trudeau is very important. Sophie Trudeau is appearing on the cover of Elle Canada's April 2024 issue. She said women shouldn't expect the minimum in what is being interpreted as a veiled swipe at Justin Trudeau by international media.
Yeah, she's about a dick.
She has been making media appearances ahead of her publication of her debut book, Closer Together, Knowing Ourselves, Loving Each Other, which will be released on April 23rd, 2024. I can hardly contain my excitement.
She is going on a global tour promoting this book. She's got this huge puff piece in Elle magazine, which I guess apparently still exists. And it's just nauseating. It goes on ad infinitum about how important she is and how serious she takes all this stuff and how very recently, like in the last few months, she became some unofficial spokesperson for mental health, and how she's known right from the start that First Lady of Canada isn't an official title, but you know, she still feels all this responsibility. Remember the prayers for Sophie thing, where she wanted like the extra two assistants and the extra maid and the extra cook or whatever the fuck it was, because she has such a difficult life. Okay. And then, so that was her in what, 2016, 2017. And now here's her in 2024. I've known right from the start that it's not an official title. Bullshit. You totally try to just get a few $100,000 worth of paid staff annually for your bullshit title. And now you've got a global tour for this sanctimonious diatribe that you're going to try and, you know, somebody fucking ghostwrit for you. Fuck off. I'd be willing to bet that there is either, if you did access to information, Sophie is somehow getting some stupid grant from some fucking Canadian content thing, or she's just got a backroom deal where Trudeau's like, yeah, so me and Sophie aren't together yet. We're going to announce it in a couple of years, but I kind of need her to get off my ass about some stuff. So I'll give the dairy cartel a bunch of free butter markups if you guys just buy her a trip to fucking Abu Dhabi.
You know, I didn't, on the dairy cartel thing, I didn't realize it until I was watching Hockey Night in Canada the other night, but milk sponsors the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's on all their jerseys, helmets, one of the two. Can't remember now. And I was like, oh,
skim
interesting.
Milk, presumably. Yeah.
Interesting. Female athletes put the class and action in class action. 16 female athletes have launched a class action lawsuit against NCAA over the allowance of a trans-identified male males into female locker rooms and competitions. The center of the suit is former UPenn swimmer and trans-identified male Leah Thomas, who rose to prominence over the 2022 swimming season, culminating in a 2022 NCAA swimming championship win.
Win in quotation marks.
Yeah. Asterisk.
He managed to overcome the drag of his penis and testicles in the water and was able to be the fastest swimmer amongst a bunch of women that he vastly outsized. Yeah. Yeah, it's really quite an accomplishment. It's very impressive. You know, he trained so hard in the off season. He was literally in the hundreds. He was in the top hundreds in terms of NCAA swimmers. And then he decides, I'm a girl now, and he's the best there is. Right? Like, I could see if LeBron James went and played in the NBA and he was the best player. Okay, sure. Fair enough. Right? Okay. Wayne Gretzky scores a few goals on Manon Raymond. All right. I could see that. Okay. But this stuff, it's, where's your sense of accomplishment? I know I've said this a bunch of times, but they're fucking pathetic.
Well, here's something
and
for.
I'm glad that there's the class action now.
Here's something for the listener around the Lloyd area, Alberta, Saskatchewan. April 12th in Lloydminster, for the kids' sake, is bringing in April Hutchinson and Linda Blade to talk. And if you don't know who those two are, they've been on the podcast, but I'll give you just a little background. April Hutchinson, the powerlifter from Team Canada, who is banned from competing because of speaking about transgender athletes. And then Linda Blade, she's a former president of Athletics Alberta, former Canadian track champion, and author of Unsporting, How Trans Activism and Science Denial Are Destroying Sport. And so with the class action lawsuit, always good to highlight what's going on in the world of sports. And then on top of it, all the insanity that's happening. And Lloyd's going to have a couple of, I don't know, Linda Blade's an unreal speaker. And then to top it off, April Hutchinson, her story and what she's been going through is pretty surreal. That's going to be April 12th in Lloydminster. So that's a Friday night. If anyone is so inclined, there's going to be more and more information coming out about that. But it seems very pertinent on what we're staring at here with this one.
I think it's great that these women are actually fighting back about this. The week that you were gone, you know, like the good episode week.
Yeah, the good episode week about, when Vince Cote or Crotty was in. Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah,
we talked about how a dude and a chick ended up in the finals in billiards or snooker, whichever one. And then the woman just forfeited. So I'm glad that they're finally pushing back on this. They're punching above their weight, and I'm happy for them.
Hands off our pensions. An open letter to sent to Finance Minister and Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland on March 6 urged the Liberals to amend rules governing pension funds to encourage more Canadian investment. It has been signed by nearly 100 current and former executives from Canada's business community. Quoted, Canada's great companies, true global champions. These competitive businesses deserve our support, and we must create more, many more. Increasing investments in Canada should be a national priority, reads the letter sponsored by Montreal-based investment management firm Letco Brosseau and Associates Incorporated. Roughly 4% of Canadian funds equity investments were allocated domestically at the end of 2022, down from nearly 28% in 2000.
So what's the whole point of the Canada Pension Plan?
To make money.
To make money. And the people who we pay to manage the fund, whose main goal is to make money, and granted their MERs are off the fucking charts, but that's another discussion. Their job is to make as much money with that money as possible. And where are they deciding to invest it, Sean?
Anywhere but here.
Right. Okay. And so our logical response to that is if we hire some of the best people in the world, obscenely high wages, to make as much money with this as possible, and they don't see this country as a viable investment vessel, rather than us changing it, like, well, what if we just set it up? Like, what are we going to invest in Canada? Are we going to give Bombardier another fucking bailout? Are we going to buy a few fucking solar panels from China that don't fucking work? Where are we going to go with this? Are we going to get another ArriveCan app for $60 million? Is that going to be a good way to spend our pension money? I don't think so. I don't think so one bit. And yet, here is not just, you know, and it's funny, you got all these business leaders and, you know, telecoms industry. There's like three fucking companies that run all the telecoms in Canada. And they're like, you should invest more in Canada. Well, of course, if they're going to invest in Canada, they're going to invest in telecom. So you basically got the dingoes saying, give us more chickens. That's basically what this is, because it started off with this petition amongst business owners saying, give us a bunch of free capital. Right. And then you've got Chrystia Freeland floating it around. And the funniest thing about this whole thing is that I haven't seen a single person from the Alberta NDP speaking out against it. And their main argument against the Alberta pension is that Danielle Smith is going to risk it all on sweetheart deals and investments locally when it should be globally spread out so that you've got proper distribution and everything else like that. This is the exact thing that the NDP has been saying is why they don't support the Alberta pension plan. And they're doing it with literally, or they're throwing out the idea of doing it literally with the Canada pension plan. And they aren't saying a fucking word about it.
You know, the other thing, first off, that's a good observation. The second thing I would say, and I haven't got there yet, is I can't remember, different article, I believe, but it said last year Mexico became the United States' biggest trading partner, surpassing Canada and China for the first time. And the value of the U.S. trade, Mexico, not Mexican. Oh, all right, there it is. The value of the U.S. trade with Mexico in 2023 was $798 billion. That's 1.1 trillion Canadian, surging past America's other two major trading partners. The increase will continue as offshore factories in China and elsewhere relocate to Mexico in order to cash in on the tariff-free North American free trade arrangement. So Mexico is winning right now when it comes to where investment is flowing. It ain't flowing up here. It's all leaving us and going elsewhere.
What are the three most expensive parts of manufacturing? Raw materials, power, and people. Okay. All of the manufacturing in Ontario is union rent, which makes it artificially expensive. And you can find the most far left economist anywhere. And they will tell you, no matter how much they love left wing policies, they will tell you that unions artificially inflate labor costs. And then you've got a carbon tax on everything that generates power, which makes it artificially expensive. So there's your two of the three main components in manufacturing are made artificially expensive, far and above what the market would bear in Canada. And as a result, Mexico is eating our lunch. Think about it this way, Sean. Siesta, okay? The Mexicans have their own fucking word for taking a nap in the afternoon. And that country is working harder than we are right now.
Renewables announcement lacks surprises. Assuming all renewable development locates on some of Alberta's best land, the percentage of such agricultural land loss is estimated to be less than 1% by 2041, says the Alberta Utilities Commission report released Wednesday. The commission takes a similar view of concerns that solar and wind facilities could leave landowners and the public with big bills for reclamation at the end of their lives. Quoted, compared to some of other forms of industrial development, renewable power plant projects have well understood and relatively contained reclamation risks, it says. The risks associated with groundwater and off-site contamination are generally low. The report is the first of two the United Conservative government asked the commission to introduce or to produce as part of its inquiry into the province's booming solar and wind power industry. The release of the reports comes shortly after the government removed its six-month moratorium or on approvals for new renewable generations. Generation. Yes. Can't spit it out.
And it also said that, what did it say? That the new rules can potentially impact 42 projects valued at over $11 billion and several thousand jobs. This is
yes.
The NDP quoting it. Well, yeah, of course it's going to affect them. That's literally the whole point of this moratorium, to come up with new rules so that it does affect all of the new projects going forward. That's literally what they do. It's what they set out to do. That was the whole fucking purpose of this. And the NDP are like, look, they did what they said they were going to do. Can you believe these assholes? Also, just real quick, I wanted to point out that the big striking realization as far as reclamation goes is that there really aren't a whole lot of rules involved with it. And so they put a six-month moratorium on it so that they could study and analyze it. And literally all they had to do was go back and listen to my 222 cents. The first mega special I did was the Green People Are Hypocritical Idiots mega special. And I had all that information in it like three years ago.
In case the hundreds of new viewers didn't know this, Tews is a really smart guy and he's really smart and he knows a lot of things. And he better give himself a pat on the back. And I'm not sure your head's going to fit in the screen here soon enough. Carry on.
All right, fine. I'm just
bobble heist. The Pittsburgh Penguins had to cancel their bobblehead promotion because someone stole the truck that was delivering the bobbleheads of retired player Jaromir Jagr.
Yeah. Apparently, whoever was driving it just left the keys by the door.
Why the hell would you steer that? You're stealing it from the vehicle.
Why wouldn't you?
And then you looked at the back and you're like, I got a bunch of bobbleheads. What are you going to do with the bobbleheads?
Does it matter? You've got a lifetime supply of Yarmer Yager bobbleheads. Like, honestly, just you can't always pick the coolest, most expensive heist. Sometimes you just got to work with what's in front of you.
What was the heist we had about a month ago? It was taxidermy, wasn't it?
There was the guy who stole the polar bear.
The polar bear.
And it was
like
the third thing that had gotten stolen from that lodge. We covered the jewel theft at the Flying J in California. We talked about the iconic painting of Winston Churchill that got stolen from the hotel in Ottawa, I want to say. As far as I know, that was never recovered.
And now you got bobbleheads.
Hey, I mean, yeah, I guess we're kind of on a downward trend. But I just, whatever we find for heists, we're going to talk about. They can't all be flashy and sexy, but I would say that this one is definitely awesome in its own way.
We'll take anyone. The military, the Canadian military, has dropped its aptitude test from the application process for dozens of jobs and plans to start accepting recruits with pre-existing medical conditions. Trial efforts meant to boost the Canadian Armed Forces' dismal recruitment numbers. The Department of National Defense projected in February that Canada's military could be short 15,000 people in both the regular and reserve forces by the end of the fiscal year. I can go on, but I think you get the point. They're going to reduce the way to get into this place because nobody's joining.
Yeah, so they're just going to be like, okay, well, maybe we'll take infantry people in wheelchairs. Maybe we'll get pilots with diabetes because, yeah, low blood sugar's, you know, not going to be an issue or anything like that. And, I mean, I don't know how many calories are in a crayon, right? But these are supposed to be our best and brightest. And we've turned away those to the point where we're just like, fuck it. It doesn't even matter. We'll take anyone. Like, they tried to genocide all the transgender people by making them join the armed forces. And when that didn't work, they're like, okay, well, this is just advanced eugenics.
Frankensheep, a Montana rancher pleaded guilty this week to two felony wildlife crimes, conspiracy to violate the Lacey Act and substantively violating the Lacey Act as part of an almost decade-long effort to create giant sheep hybrids in the United States to sell species to captivate hunting facilities. Quoted, this was an audacious scheme to create massive hybrid sheep species to be sold and hunted as trophies, said the Assistant Attorney General Todd Kim after. And then he went on to say, in pursuit of this scheme, Schuberth violated international law and the Lacey Act, both of which protect the viability and health of native populations of animals. This guy was making giant sheep twos.
He was. He was making giant fucking ridiculous sheep. And you know the crazy thing was? So it was this, this mix of, you know, some far off sheep and the local ones. What was the country he pulled them out of? So it was Montana, but it was like Kyrgyzstan.
Kyrgyzstan. Yes, Kyrgyzstan. Right. That's right.
And so he cloned the semen of the Kyrgyzstan sheep and then put it in the embryos of the Montana bighorns, right? Now, I get that I like to oversimplify things sometimes, but if you've already got the semen and you want more, you don't have to clone it. You could just do whatever the hell you did to that sheep to get the first semen, which obviously you're okay with because you have the semen.
So are you calling him a moron?
Was it such a traumatizing experience that some farmer in the middle of nowhere in Montana had to get an advanced genetics degree and learn how to clone semen he would never have to do it
when
again?
When Tuz gave me this story, I'm like, I wonder where he wants to take this Frankensheep, you know? These giant sheep. He's worried about the ejaculation process. That's what Tuz is concerned about with this evening. Welcome to the Tuesday mashup. Neil sticks to his guns 2 years after the Heart of Gold musician launched a boycott of the streaming music service over vaccine misinformation on Joe Rogan's podcast. Young says he intends to end his protest and return to the platform. Young says on his website that the same disinformation podcast features once exclusive to Spotify are now available on various streaming platforms, including those owned by Apple and Amazon. Quoted, I cannot just leave Apple and Amazon like I did Spotify because my music would have very little streaming outlet to music lovers at all. So I have returned to Spotify. He wrote a message posted Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have your principles, what else do you have? You got to stand for something. And so basically he's like, well, Joe Rogan's everywhere at this point. And so if I boycotted all of them, I'd be fucking broke. So let's just pretend like this whole thing never happened.
The rot don't stop. Canada's Auditor General recently fired and called in police to investigate two employees who had been privately earning money from government contracts they had not declared. In a statement to National Post this week, the Office of Auditor General said it is still investigating a third employee that it also discovered had contracts with another arm of the federal government the employee had not disclosed to their employer. The firings, which occurred between September and December last year, come to light as questions swirl about how a federal public servants company was able to obtain nearly $8 million contract to work on the ArriveCan app. It also indicates that no federal organization, including the biggest watchdog of the government contracting, who recently published a scathing report on ArriveCan, is immune from employees breaking the code of conduct and potentially the law by failing to report all secondary employment, particularly government contracts.
These are the people who are tasked with making sure that this kind of thing doesn't fucking happen. And they're the ones doing it. Is there anyone in Ottawa who is not corrupt as fuck? For those of you listening and not watching, I have a picture from the Zack Snyder movie Watchmen, and they're all standing there. And it's obviously early on in the movie because Dr. Manhattan's still wearing shorts at that point. Spoiler alert, you see his dick later on and it's blue. But it says who watches the Watchmen, and nobody is watching our Watchmen. And I can't believe this many people are watching me talk about dicks and ejaculating sheep.
Me and Tuz are having a little bit of fun. We're up to 795 people watching right now. And that's
just on the live stream, let alone how many people are going to tune in later. Right.
That's right.
And it's insane
for people who've been here for a long time. It's like, we had like 30 people. At one point, we had like 22. I'm like, where is everybody? What is it? Yeah, 9
why
p.m.
Are, why are we even live streaming?
We're shadow banned because Tuz brings up penises all the time on, you know, and that, I guess, isn't allowed on
it
Facebook.
It makes things really hard.
CBC gives $50 million in boners. I mean, bonuses.
What just, is on your mind tonight, Sean?
Just months after CBC announced it would be cutting 800 jobs, access to information records obtained by the Canadian Taxpayer Federation, which we have a ton of time for, shows yes. The Crown Corp handed out $14.9 million in bonuses in 2023. And since 2015, the CBC has issued $114 million in bonuses. We're working for the wrong organization, too, as we probably could have been millionaires by now.
They're the smart people and we're idiots, basically, at this point. Because they laid off 10% of their staff, got an extra $100 million in just taxpayer money, and gave themselves a $14 million pat on the back for a job well done, while literally record low people watch their fucking stuff.
Correct. Boeing whistleblower blows his top. This is a wild story. So if you hadn't heard this,
how much of this surprised you, Sean?
I guess fair, but I mean, I still think it's wild that it's like playing out right in front of us. 62-year-old Boeing whistleblower John Barnett found dead in his truck after he didn't show up for a legal interview linked to a case against Boeing. Barnett worked for Boeing for 32 years and retired in 2017. After retiring, Barnett spoke about Boeing was cutting corners on their airplanes. Just days before his death, Barnett gave evidence in a lawsuit against Boeing. Barnett accused Boeing of deliberately fitting substandard parts on their aircraft. He also accused Boeing of having faulty oxygen systems, saying one in four breathing masks would not work in an emergency situation. You may recall that they were having, you know, things come off their plane, twos, and he winds up dead, self-inflicted wound.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. He So he has been talking about all of this chicanery, there's the word again, that Boeing has been up to for years, all these issues with manufacturing. And then he speaks to the Boeing lawyers in a deposition and gets cross-examined by his counsel. And before the follow-up, so he retires, what, a decade ago, something like that, and he has been constantly trying to bring this forward, okay? And now all of a sudden, Boeing shit's fallen from the sky like it's grant money in Ottawa, and he's finally at the forefront of it. He is on the victory lap, the final lap before the victory lap, for all of this work that he's done to try and expose all of the bullshit that Boeing has been up to for years. And then, right before he gives his second deposition, he says, you know what? I kind of changed my mind. I'd rather just... And he shoots himself in his car. A totally normal, reasonable response. Okay? 100%. And I would just like to show everybody a completely unrelated picture that has absolutely nothing to do with any of this. Here is Hillary Clinton in 2016 at an event with Boeing CEO Jim McNerney. Totally unrelated. Let's get back to this whole thing.
I was going to say he got Clinton or Hillary'd.
Yeah, he got Arkansas'd.
Deadspin in Tailspin. You may recall. All right, I'm gonna pull it up. You remember the article about the kid? We talked about this on here, right? Yeah. The NFL needs to speak out against the Kansas City Chiefs fan in blackface native headdress, right? And it was a kid
they purposely got the picture of him from the side where all from you could see was the black on one side of the face and not the red
here,
on the other.
Right there
which is the black and red of their team colors.
Okay. So you for the person watching, you could see it. There's what they put out, right? Just the side of his face.
It's basically like in the Dark Knight where
and then there's actually what he looked
in the hospital and you just see half of his head and then he finally turns it and oh, there's the other half of his head. They had that picture of him so it just looked like he was in blackface and
well,
they intentionally misrepresented it.
Correct. So sports website Deadspin has been sold and the entire staff laid off. Anything else?
Yeah. I just think that's just, it should almost be the happy news. Fuck them. Fuck all of them.
Twos. Saying, you know, a sentence comes to mind. A sentence comes to mind. Fuck around and find out. That's kind of
so. All right. Here's the last minute edition Sean wanted thrown in here.
Me so harder. Me so sorry, harder. Me so harder. Yeah, here you go.
Everything you want.
The Department of Canadian Heritage paid $1,000 to Toronto pundit Dylan Horner, who disparaged conservatives in a series of profane TikTok posts. Access to information records show. Shut the F up. This is exactly why you can't trust conservatives is one of his things. This is Blacklock's reporter. As everybody knows on this show, we got a ton of time for Holly and
Tom.
Oh, and Tom, thank you. Yeah, I spaced on his name for a second. Blacklock's reporter. They're fantastic. Yep. And wouldn't you know where our taxpayers' money is going to? Good old Canadian Heritage.
Okay.
Blowing it on TikTok videos.
Is Canadian Heritage paying podcasters to swear about Canadian politicians? Because, and then the other question is it a flat rate or do you get paid per swear when it comes to Canadian politicians? Because I have to know a
salivating.
Guy.
Dude's salivating right now. I was like,
who could probably use
guy.
A little bit of that CBC money?
That guy. I can't even point. That guy would take. That guy would.
Yeah.
Rack it up real fast.
Yeah.
Like the attorney general on a plane, you know, going somewhere.
Like if the attorney general had a baby with the ArriveCan app, and then they got Wee Charities to promote it.
Happy news, Twos. Happy news. What is your happy news? Do we have happy news? Oh,
yeah.
You want this. You want this. Oh. Okay. Apologies. Okay, apologies.
So Dave Muir in Calgary, I don't know if you guys have seen, he's done a weight loss transformation over the past several years. He was a big dude, and he decided that enough was enough, and he wanted to get himself back to fit. And so he, his daughter and another girl wrote a book about his dad's process. And so they have this book out now, basically. And so he reached out to me. I don't know. We've talked a little bit. I've never met him in person, but we've talked a little bit in DMs over the years. And he was like, "Hey, man, my daughter just wrote this book. Would you want to talk about it?" I'm like, "Fuck yeah." All right. So a kid wrote a book about his dad, her dad's positive experience. And there it is. And the only thing missing from it, God damn it, Dave. I don't know. Can you buy it on Amazon? Maybe. I don't know. Do you have to go to a store? I have no idea. But there's a book. It exists. A kid wrote it. I'm happy for them, even if I have no idea where we can get a copy.
Well, I tell you what. We'll update next week. How's that?
Sure.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Community notes. What do we got going on this week, twos, that people should know about?
Well, April 27th, I feel like there was something coming up.
S&P Presents, the Cornerstone Forum is going to be in Lloydminster on the 27th. Let me just pull up the image for people. We got Alex Craner, Tom Luongo, Mikhail Thorup, Curtis Stone, Chris Sims, Chuck Prodnick, and virtual guest Martin Armstrong. They're all going to be in Lloydminster. On top of all those lovely speakers, you got 222 minutes. Drew Weatherhead from The Social Disorder, who I'm hopping on his podcast tomorrow, too. Leighton Gray, the Cowboy Preacher. There's going to be a whole host of different people rolling in that I think it's going to be a fantastic day. And then I got a group of preachers going to preach Sunday morning. So I tell you what, we're really going well. It's going to be an interesting weekend. How's that?
Hey, I'm looking forward to it. There was a time where you could have bought a table with me, but somebody else bought it. So yeah, that worked out well.
You know who else is going to be there? St. Louis Jack is coming in. So St. Louis Jack does the editing of the podcast. He's going to be coming in. So there's going to be quite the group of people in Lloydminster, April 27th, a Saturday. Tickets are available if you're interested in that. We're, I don't know. I can't remember the total now. We're over half sold with 40 days to go. So if you're interested, it's going to be an electric day in Lloydminster.
Absolutely. April 20th, Real Canadian Wrestling is in Erskine Curling Rink. So just outside of Stettler. I've heard that is a hell of a good time.
April 12th, the 12th annual PBR in the Mara Wayne Arena. June 22nd, Aaron Goodwin and Garrett Gregory also in the Mara Arena.
Are on sale now?
Yes, they are. May 11th, Walk and Run fundraiser in Turtleford with Mackenzie Bloom, 639-844-7101. That was real fast. All proceeds to the MS Society. And the clunkerdunker.com, March 23rd, 2024, Ice mini golf, burgers, and polar plunges. That's dust. If you're wanting to do a little gambling on a vehicle going through the ice, clunkerdunker.com. And that's a ton of fun. They raised a bunch of money there. They're building a community. I think that's for the community.
Communityplex.
Yes.
Going to be, it's going to have a lot of stuff in it anyway. Yeah. So lots of community events and, yes, I wonder indeed who got two's table. We'll have to try and figure that out. Looking forward to meeting you.
Can I get a single seat at Chuck's table, Earl? You know what's funny? I've had multiple people reach out about that. Well, I guess we'll see if Chuck's table sells. Chuck Prodnick has it. So is what Earl's asking.
I want to buy Chuck's table.
I know. Chris Sims reached out to me after listening to this. I probably shouldn't say this. So he's like, you know, if my table doesn't sell, that's totally fine. And I'm like, Chris, your table's going to sell. You're fantastic. Everybody who sat with you last time said how much of a hoot you were. It's going to sell. So there's three tables still up right now to sell. Chuck Prodnick, Chris Sims, and the Cowboy Preacher are the latest three to go up. I've been updating it as more and more people are showing up. If you want to buy a table with one of the speakers,
I would have assumed that Chris and Chuck would have been the first two to sell.
Well, I thought Chuck for sure. I in my brain, I just thought, oh, people are going to want to sit with the military man and hear his things. Chris Sims is probably a close second because I'm like, holy crap. Like that woman, when you sit and chat with her for 20 minutes, your brain explodes and you're going to get the whole day to do it. So there you go. And we got a whole bunch of are you wanting to go through some of the comments, or are you good tonight, Tuz? I mean, we've been going an hour and a half.
I hit a bunch as we went, and we've been going a little bit long. So, yeah, Earl, are you seriously going to fly in from Ontario for this? That would be awesome. And, okay, well, how about this? This one just came up. So you guys should get Rachel Gilmore on. That could be fun. Possibly one of the most viewed shows this year. Who the fuck wants to listen to her?
Can you imagine Tuz and Rachel Gilmore? She would never come on one. I personally don't think she'd ever come on.
I wouldn't be interested in it.
But that would last 6.5 minutes, I think. Maybe less. Probably less.
Yeah.
Folks, thanks for tuning in. I asked Tuz before we started. I said, you think last week was like a one-off? We hit, 350 people? Was that what it was, Tuz? I think it was somewhere in that range. And I was kind of like, where the heck did that come from? Because, you know, when we do the show, we were pushing 60 one week. We're like, oh, we hit 60. I don't know what we did. Ryan or whatever. We hit 350. We're like, okay. So I was saying it twos before we started. You think we're going to hit it? Yeah, well, I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe it was
150 people tune in tonight.
Next week, for the live let's stream. Hit 1,000. Let's hit 1,000 for the live stream. Hey,
I'm two friends.
Tell a couple friends. Thanks for tuning in, folks. We're going to get out of here.
Yeah.
Until next week.
Tell us what you think would be good for daytime timing.
The mashup, April 5th. It begins on Fridays, 10 a.m., 2 p.m., somewhere in between. We want to hear from you. That's going to do it for this week. Next week, mashup 99. Oh, boy.
Whose hockey number do you want to do with that one?
Probably the great one. Probably. Till then, Tuz.
You mean Mike Vernon?
Leave it to a Flames fan to pick the goalie that got it blasted over his shoulder. Iconic slap shot from the great one. No, Tuz, I'm talking about Wayne Gretzky.
Then. That's such a surprise. I didn't realize
haunted Flames dreams for just you were so happy when Peter Pocklington was a complete and utter moron, broke everything else. They sold him off. That destroyed the old Oiler community. I'm going to stop jibber jabbering. 99 next week. We're going to hit 1,000. We're at 824 as we're closing this thing off. 1,000 next week. Invite a friend or two. We'll see you then.
All right.